This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is hour number two. Thanks for joining us. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. We have got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. Don't want to miss that. Plus, later on at 40 past the hour, we're going to talk to Sean Fazendi at Fox 8 in New Orleans on the impact of Drew Brees' retirement. And it's not an X's and O's thing. It's not where do the Saints go from here, although we'll probably ask that. It's mostly about the larger context of Drew Brees arriving to New Orleans. You know, you may have heard it said in a number of different kind of pieces that, you know, Saints needed Brees, but Brees needed the Saints, right? He was coming off a repaired shoulder. New Orleans was a team and kind of, you know, a city that was suffering from Hurricane Katrina and trying to recover from that and rebound from that. And it was almost like a match kind of made in heaven, if you will, as both were trying to resurrect themselves. You know, maybe that's a Hollywood version of that, but there is something to that. There is something about his arrival in New Orleans and what it did to lift the spirits of people who do look to sports in these kind of times. You know, we talked about how the Yankees, when I was talking about Duke, and I was talking about how Duke is one of the most hated programs in sports, right? I mean, people just love it when Duke fails to deliver. And the Yankees are like that too. But, you know, after 9/11 and that World Series against Arizona, people found themselves rooting for the Yankees, even if they didn't have a dog in the fight in the World Series, right? They kind of pulled for the city. There was something about the way sports sort of brings you back. I mean, when baseball came back and Mike Piazza, the Mets, hit the home run, and there's just something about sports that is just refreshing. And New Orleans needed the Saints badly. They needed the Saints to play in the Superdome. They needed New Orleans to be a football team. And what they got out of the deal was not just a team just on a gridiron on a Sunday in the Superdome playing an NFL game. They got a guy who got them into the postseason and then eventually, in a short amount of time, won them a Super Bowl. So we'll talk about that coming up. The good, the bad, and the dumb is next as we continue along in his Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good. The bad and the dumb, the Tuesday edition, which is a lot like every other edition, but it doesn't matter. It's the good of the day.
Yes, and I don't know if this is shameless pandering to a certain TV show or character, but I'm going to keep on the bandwagon maybe until I get my swag gift.
All right.
Ted Lasso.
Of course.
I love me some Ted Lasso. So anytime I get a little nugget, I'm going to talk about it. Sorry, kids. But anyways, this week's edition of Ted Lasso lore is the story of how Jason Sudeikis created his character.
Okay.
The coaches he based it off of. And I thought it was interesting because he based it off of John Wooden, Roy Williams, Bill Self, Pete Carroll, Steve Kerr, and
Slow down. Because I really want to process all this.
All right.
John Wooden.
Like, who wouldn't base their character off of John Wooden?
All right.
Roy Williams.
Sure.
Because he's a Kansas guy. Bill Self, for obvious reasons. Pete Carroll,
okay.
Steve Kerr.
Yeah, all right.
Jurgen Klopp.
I don't know who that is, but no, I'm sure that's awesome.
Yeah, he's a really good. He's a player's coach, coaching soccer.
Okay.
Coached for Liverpool, coached in Germany for a while. And then another guy's name that just kept popping up, Donnie Campbell.
Who's Donnie Campbell?
Donnie Campbell was his high school coach.
Awesome. How wonderful is that?
And he, you know, a big mentor to him, but it was also the way Donnie Campbell used to talk kind of gave Jason Sudeikis the idea of some of those really weird sayings that we just fall in love with.
I question Steve Kerr.
Yeah, of course.
Because Steve Lasso doesn't speak on every social issue in America and constantly. Ted Lasso doesn't speak about every constant social issue
That's true.
In the country like Steve Kerr tends to do.
Yeah.
Like he seems to stay away from politics.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from Steve Kerr being a good coach, but he does
I'm sure he's awesome.
He does have really good players.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, does he have? Does Ted Lasso have a back injury like Steve Kerr that had to overcome? Remember Steve Kerr? I mean, Steve Kerr had a debilitating back injury. He overcame that to stay on the sidelines. So, well, all right, that's good. I like that. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I bet.
The problem I have with that is when you throw too many names out, it dilutes the inspiration.
Yeah,
I
think all coaches, it doesn't matter what sport you're in, are going to model something after John Wooden.
Right.
Yeah, the pyramid of success.
Seriously, though, imagine if like Trevor Lawrence became a successful quarterback. And then he says, well, I modeled my game after Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, John Elway, Dan Marino, Fran Tarkington. Like, he just
Joe
listed
Montana.
Every, Joe Montana. Like, he just listed everybody. And then you just went,
and then
well, who
it.
Exactly is your inspiration? Did you just list every good quarterback that you've ever watched on TV?
But then, you know, like in true Ted Lasso fashion or Jason Sudeikis fashion, go, and Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right, of course.
You're like, all right, I understand all the other guys. What's Fitzpatrick doing?
That's pretty awesome. Well,
but it's, you know, yeah, kind of fun that Donnie Campbell, who, by the way, I had to say this because I was talking about how he kind of grabbed some of the quotes he used to say. Tell me that, I mean, I hope we see this in a future Ted Lasso, or maybe we did. I just missed it. But I guess he can recall his former coach saying, you guys look more nervous than a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
Nice. We've all had that one good coach, right?
Don't, oh, yeah.
We should, at least.
Yeah. I have, you know, I can name off two.
My golf coach just passed away not that long ago. That was kind of sad. It's kind of weird. My teachers are all dying.
Yeah.
Like, from high school.
Yeah, I guess it's that time, huh?
Yeah, they're all dying.
I mean, I don't want to say it's you know, it is funny to think because, you know, you have some older teachers that you probably haven't thought about in a long time, and they're probably dead.
Yeah, all right. It's been
I guarantee,
30 years
like,
since,
there's like a couple that I know that have to be dead by now. If not, they're, you know, competing for a centurion of the year or whatever.
Yeah, right. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, and you know, I have a feeling that this might be the first of many stories to come. Okay.
All right.
A cheerleader mom was arrested for using deepfakes to make it look like her daughter's rivals were naked, drinking, and smoking so they'd get kicked off the team.
This story is very interesting to me because this is the one thing I've always, like, I think our older generation is wary of this kind of technology because we've been kind of process through the science fiction world a little more to know that this doesn't end well. Whereas a younger generation thinks everything that's new is awesome and great. But I think there is a generation like us who go, no, I've seen this in a book or a movie, or Hollywood has done something with this technology where the results were disastrous.
Yeah, it never comes back.
Right.
It never works out in your favor.
Yeah, like it's like when you see movies like with like people who can change their appearances, right? Like aliens who can change their appearances.
Right.
They're always bad people, right? They're always like your boss and your police officer. Like they're always somebody you trust, and then they're trying to kill you.
Or like we have discussed many, many times on this program. The more artificial intelligence you create is going to lead to Skynet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a proven fact.
Do you remember that movie? Well, of course you do. The Age of Ultron, the Avengers movie. Ultron is the bad robot, but he doesn't start out that way. He just looks at human history. He goes through that process where he has all these pictures. So his job is to bring world peace, right? So they create him to bring world peace. And he goes through the history of everything, and he realizes the one element that doesn't do this well is humans. So they got to go.
Yep.
It's a guts to go thing. We got to get rid of them. Because in his brain, the only thing humans have done is fight constantly, forever,
Or cause mass extinction. I mean, you got peaceful animals, sure. I mean, animals will kill one another, but that's part of the circle of life, which we've learned over years.
So you and I are programmed, if you will, to believe that this kind of stuff is dangerous, yet there is a generation that goes, oh, I can use this to get my daughter's rivals out of a competition or make it easier for my daughter to, you know, all of those things. And then how do you fight that when you have a desktop or a laptop at home and no money for advanced computer scientists?
Yeah.
Like, how do you fight that?
So, I mean, you're just so if for all of you listening out there who think, you know what? I mean, yeah, that mom might have been onto something. Let me create some deep fake photos and videos. So, because, I mean, basically the only reason why she did it is because there was three cheerleaders who were her daughter's rivals. And they all four of them used to be friends, but they'd kind of fallen out of favor with her. So the mom decided to get them back.
Oh, God,
okay. But here's the warning that I need to let everyone know that, you know, where you and I are smart enough to realize that this won't end well, and she obviously wasn't, and she's older than us, so I don't know how it came about. She created the deepfake photos by mapping out the victims. She then sent them the text messages all throughout. The detectives, here's where it gets fun. Detectives traced four phone numbers that had sent the deepfake images and tied them to a telemarketing website. Then they trace data from that website to an IP address at Spohn's house.
They'll always find you.
Yep.
Like, there's no hiding it. There's no hiding this. Most 99.99999% of the people don't even know how to hide this, how to hide their tracks. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's not worth it.
Yeah. It's not worth it. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, I know we're going to get into this in a little bit, in two segments from now, but I was going to highlight, you know, Drew Brees retiring.
Oh, yeah, we are going to get into this.
We are going to get into Drew Brees retiring, and we're going to look at the positive, but here's a dumb that I felt it was dumb. You know, obviously we're going to see a lot of tribute videos, but one tribute video kind of stands out amongst the rest, and it's making their fans not that happy. Here's what the Atlanta Falcons put together in their tribute video to Drew Brees.
All right. We're hearing audio, or is there going to be
highlights? Yeah, no, it's okay. Audio.
You strengthened us because you tortured us. You brought out the worst and the best of us. You became one more rep, one more sprint we didn't know we had in us. A test of our will. A reason to strain. Our first circle on the schedule. A countdown on the calendar.
Brees wants to take the shot at Thomas.
No defeats more bitter. No victory sweeter. A worthy adversary. A sharpening stone. And the nemesis we deserved. We thank you, Drew. But we won't miss you.
Now, I'm all for tribute videos, and I think they're fun, but I can't remember a rival team doing this.
First of all, am I missing something? It just, they keep telling me the Falcons and the Saints are bitter rivals, and yet I never feel that way when they play.
I guess maybe because they're in the same division.
Okay, Oakland, Denver. No matter where you live, they promote that as this bitter AFC East rival, right? Steelers, Browns,
yeah.
Steelers, Ravens, Patriots, whoever, right?
The world.
Right, the world, right? Anybody, any random two-team combination from the NFC East.
I'll go Raiders, Chargers.
Raiders, Chargers.
We're going to share a building at
whenever the Falcons play the Saints, the two times they play, do they hype that up as a rivalry you can't miss?
I guess
an NFL rivalry that stands the test of time.
Maybe in
their
world.
I never feel that way.
Maybe in
their
the
world,
South.
That's fine. I live around Atlanta.
I know you do.
I'm not far from Atlanta. I never hear my friends who are Falcons fans go, "Man, it's Saints week." Huh, Saints week. I can't wait. Can't wait. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's a thing. I don't know. But
maybe this is a way to try to create a thing.
I don't know. That I get it. They're glad Brees is gone.
Yeah. Who is it?
Right? They're glad they don't have to deal with Brees twice a year.
But I think they lost to Taysom Hill, though, this past season.
Yeah.
Or Jameis Winston.
Well, how did Winston do against the Falcons in his illustrious Tampa Bay career?
Yeah. Well,
what if he's a problem for them now?
I know he threw a pick.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
That's a safe bet.
More
safe
than one.
But I just don't get. I can't see. You know, we have this. I remember when Derek Jeter retired, and you know Mariano Rivera retired, and the Red Sox honored him.
Yeah.
And showed him gifts, but that was, you know, I can't see them going out of their way.
I don't know. I mean, Red Sox fans said the same thing. Like, oh, I'm glad we don't have to face Jeter anymore. But also, I don't know. I mean, it seems like it's fun. It's a fun thing. I don't know. I mean, it depends on how you take it.
Yeah. I just know a lot of Falcon fans are a little perturbed.
They're bothered by this?
Yes.
That they said we won't miss you?
No, they're fine with that, but the fact that the Falcons decided to get the brass team together and create an elaborate video.
They should be quiet. You got to say goodbye to one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. Let's say goodbye to him. Yeah, you know, listen, he uplifted a city. The city was underwater. He came in. He helped the city recover. I mean, part of the recovery was the emotional attachment to the local sports team, the local football team that had been part of most people's lives in the city of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And he helped not only bring it back to prominence, he brought it to prominence, and then won a Super Bowl. So, you know, he's going to be forever, ever embraced by that city forever and a day. But that's the way it's going to be. And he'll probably stay in New Orleans, just like Archie Manning did.
Yeah.
He'll probably stay in the city.
Then, you know, he has three boys.
Yeah.
Just saying, three boys, you know, in New Orleans. We saw that happen once.
Right. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue along. Sports Map Radio. We'll talk more. Talks about the NCAA tournament next. A couple of more news and notes from everybody getting to Indiana for the start of that on Thursday as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Start a week battery could leave you stranded, so don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, their professional parts people can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I remember years ago, my son, when he was in middle school, I used to pick him up every day, and I used to stand in the caravan line of cars ready to pick up. It was all. Every day I had to do this, pick up my kid. I was begging him, just take the school bus. So I sit there and I sit there in my car. And I had a car that this was at the time my wife kept telling me, get a new car. This car stinks. This car's terrible. And I'm like, nope, I paid it off. I'm going to drive it into the ground. And drive it to the ground I did. But anyway, if you squeezed it, it would be just like a delicious glass of lemonade. And I remember being in the line. And just being in the line. And eventually you get to a point where you're like, I'm just going to turn off the car. We ain't moving. So I turned off the car. And then I turned the car. And my battery was dead. And I couldn't start the car. And I'm in the line to pick up the children. So I had to do what you would do in that situation, which is get out and wave people around you while you put on your hazards. And find the football coach had to give me a jump. I was so embarrassed. And my kid was even more embarrassed. In fact, so much so that he still remembers.
Of course he was.
It. Like, oh my God, there's Dad's crappy car. This Dad's crappy car with the bad battery now, and the football coach has to give him a jump. This is not going to go well for me in fifth grade. So much so that even now as a college boy, he still remembers it. Still remembers the day Dad's battery failed on the way to pick him up.
Well, you scarred him.
I did.
He will always. I have a feeling he will always be leasing cars. He'll never have a car that's more than 3 years old.
Probably true. Richard Pitino out at Minnesota after 8 years was talking about the Indiana coach, Archie Miller, getting fired. Richard Pitino fired after 8 seasons. Oh, by the way, we were talking about Brad Stevens possibly taking that job. You know who I hope gets that job, to be honest with you? Like, I don't care if Brad Stevens takes it or not, dream job or not.
Rick Pitino.
No, I know. That'd be great. Oh, my God. Would that be wonderful? More scandals. If you think he was scandalous, wait till he got the Indiana reins.
Right.
Right. And this is going to sound weird, but I hope John Beilein gets back into the college game.
Okay.
I like John Beilein. I like John Beilein when he was at West Virginia. I definitely like John Beilein when he was at Michigan. And when he went to Cleveland to coach the Cavaliers, I was like, man, that stinks. He's a good college coach, really good college coach. But like anybody else, the NBA comes a calling and you want to give it a try. The Cavs aren't very good, and he's kind of disappeared, and I don't even know what he's doing now or how he's doing. And I like him, and I like him in the college game. And I hope that if Indiana is serious about getting a guy that can turn the program around, they give Beilein a call. I know they will. They will. They'll reach out to his agent. But I hope Beilein considers it and gets out of Cleveland, where I think he's dying and, you know, not dying. I mean, just disappearing from our public thought, and gets back to a program like Indiana. Because that guy can coach. That guy can really coach. Like I said, when he was at West Virginia, I loved him at West Virginia. I thought he was fantastic. But and that naturally led to a bigger job at Michigan. So I hope Beilein does get the job. If Brad Stephen gets it, I'm not going to be crying over that. I mean, I think that would be fine too. But Indiana, like we were saying earlier, has been irrelevant for close to 20 years in terms of the tournament. So they're not even in it this year. But six officials have been sent home after testing positive. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Like, when you hear this news, is this a glass half full situation or a glass half empty situation? Meaning, hey, we found six officials who tested positive. We're on the ball before this thing gets started. Or, oh my God, what is going on?
The issue that I have, I think it was one ref tested positive, but all six of them were hanging out with each other.
Right.
Having dinner because their hotel room wasn't ready. But the other five have not tested positive.
So that's at least a good sign.
But they have to go.
They
have to go home. They can't
so
be
a part
of
this. So it doesn't matter if they're positive or not.
No.
They have to go. So in a way, if you're more of an optimist, this is the system working, right? I mean, this is the process working.
Here's the problem that I have. So these six were all hanging out with each other. If you have a basketball player that tested positive and he doesn't know, but he had a full practice the day before, does that mean the entire team has to go?
That's right.
That's what it basically means if the NCAA is holding to the guns.
Seriously.
I mean, it's Duke. Sorry, Duke. One player tested positive.
And
y'all
they're out
got to go.
That's it. All it takes is one guy. That's it. One guy. And it's over.
It's over. So, it's done.
So on the one hand, listen, and listen, I like to think I'm more optimistic on these kind of things, but I'm not going to lie to you. And I'm not, oh, woe is us. Like I'm not doom and gloom. I really hope this tournament goes off without a hitch. And I think the protocols are in place to allow that. Do I think bringing 68 teams to a state and most of them in one geographical area, something that is going to go off without a hitch, without a bubble? Probably not. There's probably going to be something. There's probably going to.
There has to be.
I kind of think like the odds are that something is going to happen to somebody somewhere. I mean, again, if you were like when they shoved all the NBA teams to Disney World, we talked about this. They didn't just bring you to Disney World and go, here's your keys, go. Like you had to quarantine. You had to test. You have to test. We're not playing until everybody in this bubble is COVID free. Then we'll start playing the basketball tournament, right? That's not what's happening here. These guys are going into Indiana, but there's no bubble here. Like you said, there was six officials hanging around together because their room wasn't ready.
Yeah. They just decided to have dinner together.
Like, yeah, they just said dinner. In the NBA bubble, you could do that only because they tested you 17,000 times and then said, yep,
also,
you're all good. Now you can come out of your room.
It also kept you in a hotel where you weren't allowed to go to other hotels.
Yeah.
Remember, I mean, it was that strict as well. And they had no, there was nothing they could do.
Who was it? Who was the writer? Was it Chris Mannix who went down there and wrote a whole like diary? It was like, I'm in my room for 7 days.
Yes.
Like it's a gorgeous 75 degrees outside or whatever is 90 degrees outside. And I can't go out and do anything because they're keeping me in this room and they come in, they test, they leave my food outside the door.
They knock and then they run away.
Yeah, right.
And then there's just food there. It's a magic food fairy.
Magic food fairy leaving food at the base of your door of your hotel room. But he wasn't allowed to leave. That's how strict the NBA bubble was. That's not going on with 68 basketball teams in Indiana and Indianapolis.
You know one of them staying at a Hampton Inn. They're not all staying in a luxury resort.
So, hey, listen.
Hampton Inn, didn't mean to put you down like that.
If they pull this off, God bless them. I think they will. I think in the end, we're going to have a tournament. We're going to have games.
Wouldn't it have made more sense to split it between two cities?
I think he could have done it. 34 teams in two locations, monitoring it, doing all that in two
locations.
Just in case is right. We'll talk Saints and Drew Brees' retirement and what it meant to the city of New Orleans to have him arrive back in 2006. That's all coming up. Wake up call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along at his Wake Up Call. And as you know, Drew Brees announced his retirement from the NFL up to 20 seasons and 15 with the Saints. We go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Sean Fazendi joins us, Fox 8 in New Orleans, to talk about Brees and the impact he has had on the city and where the Saints go from here. How are you, Sean?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Sean, take us back to 2005. Take us back to Hurricane Katrina in the city, what it was going through, and how important the Saints are to the fabric of New Orleans, because it is going to lead to Brees' arrival.
Well, it's hard to put into words, and I even tweeted it out. I mean, if you weren't here on 8/29/05, August 29, 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit, it's hard to really fathom just how chaotic and how lost and how devastated and destructed this place really was. And this is a city where, I mean, the roots go back deep. I mean, it's an older American city. This is a city where people stay. This is a city where, you know, family lineages, you know, go back, you know, centuries. And to see it all underwater, I mean, it just struck fear in a lot of people. And it was just a type of fear that, you know, none of us had ever felt. You know, I'm a native New Orleanian, and it just was, you know, everyone, you know, at that moment, life, you know, instantly changes, and you reconsider all the priorities in your life. What are you going to do? Are you going to come back to the city? Are you going to do anything? I mean, is my house still here? I mean, you drive to parts of the city where, you know, you would regularly, you know, go to or see or attend, and all of a sudden there's no streets there. I mean, there's no houses there. All the cars are flipped over. So it's hard to put into words the absolute destruction and just devastation, both physically and mentally, that the city was in at that time. And if you recall, you know, the Saints in 05 had to do that crazy season where, you know, they'd spent part of the year in San Antonio. They played some home games in Baton Rouge. There was talks about them possibly moving. And, you know, they make the decision with the help of the NFL to come back. And but the team was a mess. I mean, the team was an absolute mess. But nonetheless, the Saints came back. So that at least helped jumpstart the process a little bit to recovery, which was a long, painful road to recovery. I mean, painstakingly slow. But nonetheless, the Saints portion of it, them coming back and saying they were going to be back in 06 in New Orleans, at least had some a little bit of hope. And then, as you mentioned, Drew Brees, you know, him signing, it was the first, okay, well, maybe we got something here. And it was March 2006. And, I mean, look, March 2006 was what, doing math in my head, 7 months post-Katrina?
Yeah.
I mean, you think there would have been a little bit of progress. It was maybe a little bit of progress in terms of the recovery and getting things going. But it wasn't very – I mean, it was still very much cities, parts of the city completely, like, hadn't been touched. So – he was this guy choosing to come to New Orleans, and obviously the circumstances weren't just like he chose us. I mean, there were obviously other factors in place, but nonetheless, he chose New Orleans, and, you know, who would have thought that at that point he would stick around for 15 years and basically rewrite the record books.
I've told this story on the air before, and I'll tell you, I remember when I was a young talk show host and I was in Colorado Springs, a sort of military town that has a lot of mm-hmm. people from a lot of different places around the country. And I remember going through that 05 season, and I said, look, I don't think the Saints can stay in New Orleans. I don't think the local infrastructure will be there. They need to move. And I got a call from a guy who was literally imploring me to understand how important the Saints were. He said, you don't mm-hmm. get it. This is not mm-hmm. any other team moving. This is so important to the city, and if they move, mm-hmm. it will kill the city. And I started rethinking the relationship between the Saints and the city of New Orleans. In terms of how close was it a concern that the Saints could leave, could go to San Antonio or a place like that and be done and never go back to New Orleans again?
There was certainly a fear, and there were certainly reports at the time that perhaps that was the plan of attack, if you will, for you know, the Saints and what they want to do. And at that point, you know, it's true. I mean, no one knew what was going to happen here in this city. No one knew it was going to the future held. And it was talks about not rebuilding parts of the city. And, you know, if you're the Saints owner at the time, you had to protect, you know, your investment as far as what the, what's best for your team and your employees, obviously. So it wasn't like it was a crazy, thought process at that time, because everybody was reevaluating their lives. I know me personally, I was a young guy. I was in my 20s at the time. You know, I personally was like, well, what should I, relocate somewhere else, start from somewhere else? I mean, everybody was having those, thoughts, young families moving out because, the things here in the city that were not up to par. But, the NFL stepped in. They were obviously going to, wanted to get the, everything back in New Orleans. And, so it was a fear, but it was the fear within the context of the entire, notion of this city not coming back. And just because, it's just hard to put into words the actual devastation. I mean, and just the negative feel, the bad morale surrounding the city at that point. So, all those factors were in play, but once it was made, they're going to come back to New Orleans. I think that slowly but surely started to put kind of sort through everything. But if they would have moved, I mean, it would have been A, New Orleans would have never got another professional franchise in terms of football again, and B, I don't know if the city is where it is right now. I mean, I really don't.
It is amazing what sports can do, what the community can rally around and be uplifted by. That being said, what made it attractive to Drew Brees coming in from the Chargers? Sean Payton's coming there too, and it's looking like there's some elements. But in the end, when Brees was announced and he was going to sign, what was the attractiveness? Did he obviously understood the monumental task of the team and going back into the city and what the city was going through? But what were the attracting features of the Saints for Drew Brees to resurrect his career?
Well, first and foremost, the team wanted him. And they, offered him a contract that obviously stated that at the time, which was a six-year, $60 million contract, which now for a quarterback seems like a bargain. But now, back then, it was certainly a big-time deal. It's that legendary story of Sean Payton taking him around the city. And he gets lost. So instead of showing him the nice parts where everything's still working and it's still up and running, they take a turn, and all of a sudden you see just the absolute devastation. It's the Lakeview part of town, which was completely rocked. That's where the canal breach or the levee breach happened. And I mean, Lakeview was completely underwater. And at that point, I mean, there was boats in the street. There were houses completely off foundations. And he said, seeing that it resonated with him just how much. They needed, a winner, or how much he could help this city and how much he can help bring it back. And bring it back he did, but make no mistake, it was not an easy sell. And, a lot of things had to go right for the Saints. And one of the things, and, we highlighted this about a year ago, was the team doctor for the Dolphins basically flunked Brees' physical, said, 70% chance he does not come back, 30% chance he does, while a man by the name of Dr. Tim Finney, the Saints team doctor at the time, really took a hard look at the physical, took a hard look at the injury, and, he put his reputation on the line to pass Drew, and it ended up being, the ticket for Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis to offer the contract and roll with Drew Brees as their quarterback, and the rest, as they say, is history. And it really is something, because what happened was he signed, and they get Reggie Bush, and then the season gets here, and the preseason was not great, but it was football, so it felt good. And then all of a sudden, they start winning. And all of a sudden, it's amazing. All of a sudden, the morale just shifted. And just slowly but surely, you see everybody, maybe we're going to, stick around after all. Maybe we're going to, get through this. Maybe we're going to do, rebuild. Maybe we're going to maybe we're going to make it. Maybe it'll be all right. And then it's amazing what that season did. And if you look at the city right now, I mean, it's certainly not perfect by any means, but go to those spots where, like I said, Lakeview or St. Bernard, where it was hit really hard. All of a sudden, those parts of the town are back and better than ever. So it's hard to put into words what he meant, because I tell people it's hard to describe just how desperate it was here at that point.
In terms of his legacy with the Super Bowl, I mean, there are going to be people who said, look, they were snake bit so many times in the postseason. I think it's hard to win a Super Bowl. I think it's hard to win any championship. But is there a feeling like there's a missing second Super Bowl in the legacy of Brees and the Saints?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. At least in terms of the perspective from the game's greats, the NFL greats. He rewrote the record books. He's won a ton of games. But, yeah, there is a little bit of, man, they really should have had two, especially this last run they've had, the 2017 or 2020 teams, where they won more games than any team in the NFL regular season-wise, and obviously they got the NFC Championship in 2018. That really was the team that should have made it, and they were robbed, obviously, with the no call against the Rams. So there definitely is a little bit of disappointment that there wasn't two. Just in terms of the context of the game's greats, and probably you had a team that was good enough. But, you know, look around. There's a lot of great quarterbacks that only won one and never got back. I mean, I'm thinking in Green Bay. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers still only won one. While that's certainly there, and you could make the case that they should have two, and I would probably agree with you, it hasn't tarnished his legacy one bit here in New Orleans. He's the best to ever lace him up for the Black and Gold.
Where do they go from here? They just re-signed Jameis Winston. They restructured Taysom Hill's contract. Is there a leader in the clubhouse, if you will? It's March, but is there a feeling of where the Saints will go with the quarterback?
It's going to be a quarterback competition. Depending on who you ask, they'll lean one way or the other. And Taysom Hill did a decent job when he came in. For Breeze in those four games, he went 3-1 as a starter. Jameis obviously has a big body of work from Tampa Bay. And they like his presence in the locker room as well. Both guys have their strengths. So I think if there's going to be a legitimate competition to battle it out. You might say Jameis has a slight lead just because of the execution of what Sean Payton wants to do offensively. I think Taysom, you know, he's obviously got another role as well as that hybrid athlete guy that does a lot of different things on the football field. But also, you know, don't discount the possibility of them bringing in another vet, because they're going to have to anyway. If Taysom, let's just say it came up to be Winston winning the job, Taysom would probably go back to his athletic role. They would have to sign a third quarterback anyway, or, you know, even draft a guy. I certainly think that's on the table as well. So they're not going to name a guy right now. It's going to be a genuine competition. The first one Sean Payton's had since he's been here. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the organization goes on, if you will, without the absolute strong and just commanding presence that was Drew Brees for the last 15 years.
Sean Fazendi, again, Fox 8 in New Orleans on the Brees retirement and the impact on the city of New Orleans. Thank you for coming on, because I know that over time and in history, we tend to polish off the edges of some things, and not everything, mm-hmm. but some things. And I do really want to reemphasize how devastated the city was and how this story, how sports came in and Brees it without sort of polishing off and making it, oh, well, you know, the city was underwater, but it came back. It really, you really painted a picture of what the situation was like for the people in that city. And I really am glad you shared your experience.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks a lot.
You got Sean Fazendi again, Fox 8 in New Orleans, on Drew Brees, the impact that he had on a city that was underwater and did not know if its NFL football team would stay. And that was real. It seems silly now where everything was rebuilt and the Superdome is back and the Saints are this playoff team that wins a lot of games. But he's right. If you remember in 2005, if you're old enough to really remember it, to put it in context, there really was a conversation that the Saints could not stay in that city, that they just did not have the local elements that you need. You get the national TV deals, you get the big money, right? But you do need season ticket holders and local company support and corporations spending money on your, no matter what level of sports you are. And I, at the time, and I know a lot of people felt the same way, that the city of New Orleans did not look like it was going to be ready anytime soon for that level of commitment locally to a major NFL team. And they did it. And they did it. And one of the reasons they did it was Sean Payton and Drew Brees arriving there and turning that team into a winner. And 3 years later, Super Bowl champions. All right, we'll continue with his Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Ask and you shall receive on Twitter. Michael, Falcons and Saints rivalry has been more bark than bite. They talk it up big on local sports talk, but you don't see it in sports pubs. I think it's because half the city's population is from somewhere else. There's more Steeler bars than Falcon bars. I, I, I felt the same way. I never feel like the Falcons-Saints rivalry is one of these big juggernaut NFL rivalries that you know and respect, even if you're nowhere near those cities. Right? I mean, look, Philadelphia, Dallas, Dallas, Washington, New York, Philadelphia, New York, Dallas. I mean, like the NFC East.
They all hate each other.
Pull them out of a hat and you have a rivalry. And everybody knows it. Right? Those AFC West rivalries are good. The Steelers and the Ravens. You just know it. When the Steelers and the Ravens are on, they pump that thing up nationally like everybody's all in. But not the Falcons and Saints.
No,
I never feel like they're...
Well, I mean, for years, they weren't even in the same division, right?
Well, the Falcons and Saints? The Falcons, this is interesting. When I was young, I know I say this a lot, but when I was a young man, the Falcons played in the NFC West.
Yes.
And Atlanta Braves played in the NL West. So I remember arguing with my second grade teacher, Mrs. LeBrun, who I think is awesome. But I remember telling her that Atlanta was in California when I was in second grade.
Yeah.
Because I was like, they play in... why would a team in Georgia play in the West Division in two sports?
I think the first time I heard that Atlanta was in Georgia and where Georgia was, I kind of remember it being a mind-blowing experience.
Why would they play San Francisco and the Dodgers and the Padres all the time, and the Falcons were playing all those West teams? Yeah, that's true. All right, Jake Asman Show is coming up next. We will see you tomorrow. Again, getting closer and closer to that tournament as we continue along with Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.